This is Fresh Air. Ruben Martinez says just about all he talks about nowadays is the L.A. riots and the aftermath. Some of the issues underlying the riots, like racism and the clash of cultures in the city, are issues he's been writing about for years in the L.A. Weekly. He's also been writing about the clash of cultures within himself. Martinez's mother is Salvadoran. His father is Mexican. Martinez grew up in an Anglo-Jewish middle-class neighborhood in L.A. He was weaned on a blend of cultures, and to better understand them, he's recently traveled extensively through Latin America. Essays about those travels are included in his new book, The Other Side, Fault Lines, Guerrilla Saints, and the True Heart of Rock and Roll. His ethnic identity is a source of pride now, but he confesses that back when he was in public school, he had to fill out an ethnic survey, and when asked to check white, black, or Mexican, he checked other.
Back then, this is the late 60s and early 70s that we're talking about, to say that you were Mexican sounded dirty. Just even to say the word, you could almost hear the preface of the word dirty Mexican, as in dirty Mexican. I certainly had been called it several times, as my father had, who grew up basically in the same neighborhood in the 40s and 50s. Not much had changed by the 60s. There was still a lot of racial prejudice. So growing up where I did grow up, where I was basically the only Latino kid on the block, rather an anomaly in the neighborhood, I did everything I could to assimilate. I felt that it was either join them or not, you know, or be beaten. And I did my best to speak a perfect English, to become part of the Brady Bunch reality, to basically become Anglo. And so this was, you know, expressed even through the ethnic surveys. I thought I could check that box that said other and write in the word Spanish. Because Spanish, you know, denoted something European and something whiter than I was. And so it was basically becoming the other, which is a process that I experienced for many, many years. And that ultimately set the stage for a big cultural battle inside my soul. Because by the time I was 18, 19, that assimilation game that I'd played when I was younger had basically also made me pay a huge price. And I was angry, so angry at that time when I finished high school, and I didn't know at what or at who. But eventually I came to realize that it was because I'd been denying a part of myself for many, many years. I'd been repressing the Latino side of myself for so many years. And you can't stuff, you know, your soul that deep inside you, you know, stamp it down or stamp it out without it coming back to haunt you one day. And at first I didn't know what it was, so this anger led me to all kinds of scenes, whether it was, you know, the punk, you know, rock scene or reading Jack Kerouac and going on the road like crazy looking for something, and I didn't know what I was looking for. Eventually, after all the rock and roll and sex and drugs of the early 80s, I figured that it was culture that was the real battle. And I began to travel to Latin America a lot. And those travels are basically what The Other Side is about.
So did you go through extremes early on in that roots trip?
To say the least, extremes. I went from having been an assimilationist all the way to The Other Side to being an absolute nationalist radical that would reject anything that smacked of the European. I also fancied myself quite the Marxist at the time. We're talking about the mid-80s right now, at the height of the war in El Salvador. So there was a lot of political and cultural signs that pointed to radicalization. And given the fact that I'd been repressing myself for so long, it was very attractive to me. So I would qualify myself at that point like a cultural nationalist, a separatist, and a Marxist, and hoping for the spread of this, you know, revolution throughout the continent. That only lasted for a few months, though.
What were the L.A. riots like for you, being a person who feels of such divided cultures? Where were you when they started?
Well, as a journalist, I was with many other journalists at the First AME Church, which I'm sure is familiar to many people around the country now, the African-American church in South Central Los Angeles, where Los Angeles's black leadership had gathered basically to exhort people to refrain from violence. And we were not very far away at all from the flashpoint of Florence and Normandy Avenues, where Reginald Denny and other motorists were beaten. The city exploded around us that evening, and I suppose that I wasn't surprised, because in many of the essays and journalistic pieces that I'd done over the years, I'd been saying that there was the possibility of a long, hot summer in Los Angeles. It was obvious that the city was dry wood waiting to be ignited. But once it did happen, it was very difficult, of course, to see it happen, to see where I'd grown up, finally go over the edge. And I guess, along with the sadness, the other strong emotion that I felt was anger, a rage that knew no direction, knew no boundaries. I was angry at the city's political leadership for having abandoned basically South Central and most of the inner city for so many years. I was angry at my own culture for the self-destruction and participation in the violence of Latinos and African Americans and Asian Americans. I was angry at the city's white leadership. I was angry at big business for having screwed over the barrios. And I was angry at everybody in the government for having let the infrastructure, such as education and health and everything else, gone down the tubes for so many years, and which paved the way for this rebellion.
We're describing a pretty unified reaction across the board, anger. But I'm wondering if any of the divisions and conflicting loyalties and conflicting identities that you have came into play.
Certainly, and I still feel them now. I mean, I think I just used the word rebellion, and it depends on the context which word I use to describe what happened. Sometimes I say riot, sometimes I say rebellion, sometimes I say uprising. And of course, you know, rebellion or uprising is usually used by people more of the political left that kind of gives, you know, what happened a political import, that it was a purposeful rage, that it was a political protest. The word riot tends to describe a chaotic scene, and I go back and forth on it all the time. There are times when I think that, yes, some of the violence was justified. There are other times that I think that none of the violence could possibly be justified, especially in cases, of course, like the Reginald Denny, the beating at Florence and Normandy, the truck driver who was set upon by youths the first day of the riots. So it's difficult to tell. I think we're still too close to the event to really know what it's going to mean in the long run historically. If in 10 years the Los Angeles uprising of 1992 is looked back upon as the moment that it was like a wake-up call for the city's political leadership, for the city's citizenry to really change the way life is in Los Angeles, and some real change results from that, then we can go back and say, well, perhaps it was a rebellion that led to real substantial social change. But if nothing changes, then what do we call it? Maybe perhaps just senseless rage that led to nothing. And sometimes I'm of the opinion that that's where we're at with it.
My guest is Ruben Martinez. He writes for LA Weekly and is the author of the new book, The Other Side, Fault Lines, Guerrilla Saints, and the True Heart of Rock and Roll. We're going to take a short break and then talk some more. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Ruben Martinez. He writes for the LA Weekly and is the author of the new book, The Other Side. Have you found that your personal friendships have been able to transcend the ethnic divisions of the city, especially after the riots? Or did the riots kind of affect in some way your relationships with friends and colleagues?
Definitely. In the midst of the riots, I'm a senior editor at the LA Weekly newspaper here, and during the riots, I felt a lot of ethnic tension, racial tension at the newspaper. I'm one of the very few people of color that worked there, and the riots were all about color, as it were. There was a moment when my managing editor, who is white, came over and pressured me for some copy. And out of nowhere, I don't know where this rage came from. Well, yes, I do. I'm sorry. I do know where this rage came from. This rage just blasted out against him. He was an innocent victim of my rage in that moment. I mean, it didn't have anything to do with him. He was just asking me for copy. But within the context of the riots, his pressuring me for copy became a symbol for what white had done to brown or black for the last 500 years on this continent. To say the least, I profusely apologized later. There was a lot of situations like that in which I felt tension with people who I hadn't felt tension with before. And by the same token, since then, I find myself still going back and forth between perhaps a position of that is more nationalist, where I'd rather be more often with my Latino friends than Anglo friends. But whenever I feel myself going too far to one side, I feel like I have to come back and go to the other side again, because both sides are mine. I mean, as a poet, you know, I read Pablo Neruda, the Chilean poet, as much as I do Walt Whitman. And in my life, if either one of them was missing, I wouldn't be complete. I have to have both Whitman and Neruda there. And as such, in Los Angeles, I need my Anglo friends, I need my African-American friends, I need my Latino friends and Asian friends. And I wouldn't have it any other way. Whether or not we're able as a city to keep it together like that so that friendships like that are possible, sometimes I think that it might be too late, that we started to work out the economic problems that led to this explosion too late. But I'm hoping against hope that it isn't too late.
How did you choose the neighborhood that you live in? And I ask you that because you feel so so much a product of different borders.
I'm living in a northeast of downtown area known as Echo Park. It surrounds a lake. It's not a real lake. It's a man-made lake, but there's real ducks in it. It's an Anglo-Latino-Asian neighborhood. The one cultural element that's missing is African-American. There's no real African-American presence in Echo Park. I wish there was. But precisely because of the mix of ethnicities and because of the class mix, because Echo Park, you go all the way up into the hills and it's quite gentrified, and you go down into the valleys and it's very working class. The sparks that are given off by a situation of class and ethnic, you know, mixing like Echo Park are incredible in terms of popular culture. The juxtapositions are wild. You have restaurants that, I guess this has happened before, like in New York, you know, where certain mixes have occurred. But right here in L.A. and Echo Park now, we have restaurants that have signs saying Mexican Thai food. Or Cuban Salvadoran food, teriyaki burritos, which are one of LA's delicacies now. So once again, this points out the possibility of a wonderful third culture or fourth world possible when our different groups come together. And it's also just wonderful to see what I call the process of the tropicalization of Los Angeles taking place. There are street vendors on the corner of Sunset and Echo Park, barrio, selling papayo and papaya and mango and pepino and all kinds of other fruits and vegetables. Whereas our streets had no street life before. L.A. was known as the place of freeways and of sun-washed streets that nobody ever walked. You know, you just drove around, right? Well, now people walk again in Echo Park. There's an incredible street life, not just the street vendors, but people hanging out on the porches. It looks like a real city. It looks like a real community, if I could even use that word. It's just breathing again, you know, whereas the streets were lifeless before.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry.
Ruben Martinez writes for the LA Weekly, and he has a new collection of pieces called The Other Side, Fault Lines, Guerrilla Saints, and the True Heart of Rock and Roll.